Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak. And I'm yours, Dave.
I'm Ben.
And John.
And as promised, we're going to now bring you part two of our coverage from Wizard World Philly this week. And before we get to all of that, we did talk about one thing last week a little bit, was the Supergirl. They're going to bring Superman on the show. And we talked about possible casting for the part.
I'm willing.
If only there was a poll to get people's opinions on these matters.
I put a poll out on our Twitter feed. I told you I love the Twitter polls. Go ahead, touch it.
Yeah.
Touch it. Yep. Touch my Twitter poll. Touch
and,
it.
And nope. Moving on. And
So what are the results of the poll, Dave?
Unwashed masses say.
So we gave them four options. Tom Welling. Matt Bomer, who is my personal choice. I think Ben agrees with me too. He'd be a good choice. An unknown, let's not put a known actor in the role. So that way it's, you're not taken out of the role, you know, when you're watching the show, or someone else. And then I said, you know, reply. So we got a good amount of responses it's not an overwhelming one or the other. 36% picked Tom Welling. So he is the winner, followed up closely 30% by an unknown.
Josh Gad.
I would love to see that. Then third place is Matt Bomer. And then 11% said someone else. And, of course, they were supposed to reply with the someone else. And, we didn't get it.
Well, just because they wanted someone else doesn't mean they had ideas.
Well, I'm sorry. Someone did reply with Josh Gad.
Someone very handsome, I'm sure.
Yes.
And incredibly brilliant.
Somebody with a beard, but their icon looks like a South Park character. I don't know who that could be.
I don't know. All I know is you have to give a lot of credit to this mysterious genius.
The one thing that was brought up, though, was by GeekFreak.com. One of the people who responded to the poll, was the issue with Tom Welling is, would it bring in the Smallville baggage? Would people automatically associate that Superman with Smallville? And do they want to have to say that's the history of that Superman on that Earth?
Well, it's a clash of continuity even within the show itself. Like, you're not even ignoring the fact that they had their own established Green Arrow and version of the Flash and things like that that are different from the ones on the CW. They also had their own Supergirl in that show that was played by a different actress who is now also in Supergirl as Indigo.
Yep. Yes.
So you pretty much have to, yes, you might have that baggage, but it wouldn't stick around for long because clearly they've already broken all of that baggage and lost it somewhere in Phoenix.
Of course, if you look at the actress, and I wish I should bring up IMDb.
I will look at that actress.
But her. Well, the crazy thing is that Smallville ended 10 years ago.
Yes.
Or longer, and she looks the same.
Yes. Yes, she
does.
It's
kind of scary.
It wasn't 10 years ago.
It feels like 10.
Pretty sure it was 2000 or 2010.
Was it?
Something like that.
Yeah, well.
So anyway.
Fine. We bring in baggage. Or they could just say he's from the rebirth universe of number 22 or something like that, where things weren't quite the same, but he looked like that.
Yeah, no. And I agree with that. But in the same token, it's the average person watching that show is going to go, well, wait. Where's Pete and where's, oh my God, what was the other friend's name? The girl?
Chloe Sullivan.
Yeah, Chloe. Yeah, where's Chloe?
Oh God, yeah.
She was my favorite.
Yeah, she was mine too.
You know, and then
I don't think that's
go ahead.
I was just saying, I don't think that would happen because, again, as we did talk about last week, by moving it to the CW, they're moving it to their core audience, the geekier audience who knows all these things, the people like us who are having these thoughts and these conversations already. They're not, I don't think anyone would assume to think that they're going to carry over these characters. Now, that said, I'm sure everyone would start speculating about where they might bring in those actors in guest spots or cameos playing some other supporting roles other than the ones they originally played, like the actress who played Chloe Sullivan playing some part in Smallville or in Supergirl. In Supergirl, other than as Chloe Sullivan.
Okay, as long as if they bring Michael Rosenbaum back, he plays Lex Luthor, and that's it. Just
no, they'd have to give him a grill first.
Well, speaking of Luthers,
I said Luthor, not Joker.
Does it matter?
But bringing up Luthers, they are casting a Luthor for Supergirl this next season.
See,
did you hear about that?
I did hear about that.
Was it Lena Luthor? Lex's sister.
God. You know, I as girl power as some people really want this to be, you know, it doesn't have to take the Supergirl movie route and all the cast members are now women and, you know, the men are relegated to the side. That's just as stupid as the other way around.
Just so you know, John's views do not reflect those of the rest of the show.
I was going to say, it's no, not all women on the show.
There's some side, you know, handsome looking men around just for scenery and.
Yeah, but when in the comics was Lex Luthor's lesser known sister the more dangerous one?
No one said that. No one said she's coming in as a villain necessarily. They're just introducing the character.
Yeah, but it's a Luthor, so you know it's going to turn out to be a villain.
I wouldn't assume.
I think you're projecting, John.
Yes.
Your feelings about the Luthers onto this poor woman who we don't even know who she is yet.
Right.
Uh-huh. 2 years from now, you're going to be saying, all right, we know she's evil. Fine.
You have to learn to put trust in your heart, John. Just a little bit. Be open.
I, for one, believe in that S that stands for hope.
You mean Shope.
Shope.
Wait. Don't say that three times faster. You'll invoke the Deadpool. Shoop-a-doop.
The other thing that came up this week, speaking of Smallville and Tom Welling and Supergirl, is there was I can't remember the name of the show, but there was a show he was supposed to be a part of coming up, which has been canceled before it even got started. So now everyone's saying, "Huh?"
I was just making some music for effect.
Oh,
no, was it the choice? I guess
something like that. But now everyone's going, well, look who's now free to play Superman.
Look who's been free for the past decade to play Superman. That doesn't mean anything.
Right.
What has he been working on?
Yeah, he really hasn't done a whole lot. He did nothing between 2001 and 2013. He did Parkland and Draft Day, 2013-2014. That's literally it.
He also was executive producer on some show on Fox, too.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
You know, he can work behind the camera.
It doesn't count.
Just because you don't see an actor doesn't mean they're not working.
Nope. Yeah, it does. They don't exist.
It kind of is the definition of an actor not working, because actors, you know, like their whole job is being seen. And if you don't see them, then they're kind of failing.
That's like
we all know that Fred Savage has no career anymore. And, you know, so many other actors that we grew up with, they're gone. They don't exist anymore.
You're horrible. You're both horrible.
We are going to make sure that we lose any future interviews that we could have possibly gotten right here, right now.
Oh, we're working on it.
You're working pretty hard at it, too. Anyway, that's like Jodie Foster doesn't work anymore, right?
Right, no, she doesn't.
Hey, no, you leave Jodie Foster alone.
She directed a movie. She's been directing movies.
She's something.
Right.
Anyway, okay, so back to the issue at hand. They're going to be casting Lex Luthor's sister, and Tom Welling's free to play Superman if he chooses or if they ask him.
Now, here's a question. If they hire Matt Bomer as the Clark Kent Superman, will he be involved with Lois Lane.
Lois?
Lois.
Oh, you know.
I mean, it'd be a change. Would that be too big of a change?
That would be too big of a change, I think.
Okay.
I honestly think.
I mean, they made Jimmy Olsen, you know, the big black hunky James Olsen. So why couldn't Superman bat for the other team?
Oh my God! Well, you know, all bets are off considering that Flash just did Flashpoint at the end of season two. So, I mean, this whole second season of Supergirl, third season of Flash, and what fifth season of Arrow? I mean, they're literally freebies. They could do anything they want. And at the end of the season, they could wipe it away with Flash letting his mom die again.
I'm still convinced they're going to wrap it up a lot more quickly than we think they will. I think it wouldn't surprise me if it only gets addressed on Flash. It only takes a handful, like maybe the first episode or two, to rectify. And you see no impact of it on any of the other shows.
Are you willing to put a wager on that?
Yeah. I'll make a gentleman's wager that's what's going to happen.
This is too much of an opportunity for them to do a lot of weird stuff. I think they're going to take it. I think they're going to do something with it.
I think there will be repercussions. Like, I think that they'll use this as a means for there to be more breaches and be more, flexibility between those boundaries so that there can be more crossover events.
Maybe bring back people who have died in the past. Black Canary.
I think
we already got an evil version of her once.
I think my opinion is going to be that the first episode of Flashback? The first episode back for the Flash is going to be him trying to get his powers. Obviously, it's going to start off with he's back, his mom and dad are alive and with him, and he's happy.
He has no powers.
And he has no powers, and something big happens, and he goes, oh, crap, this is what I've screwed up, so now I've got to go back and put things right again.
Then he meets Batman's dad.
No.
Somehow he survived.
My guess it's going to be Professor Wells that helps him get his powers back.
The original.
Besides, John, you know he's not going to be Batman's dad. He's going to meet Oliver Queen's dad, who is running around as the Arrow.
Oh my God, that they would actually do that, wouldn't they?
Yes, I think they would.
I think they'll end. I don't know if it'll be one or two episodes, but let's say it's one episode. They'll have him going back to set everything back right.
It's too much of an opportunity. There's no way they're going to confine that to one.
And what they're
going to
do is
episode.
on the other shows, they're going to have like a weird Kwanzai something going on just to have fun with it. You know, to see, what was different because Flash didn't exist. Because it can't not affect it.
Sure, but I think they'll give Flash a two-week head start as far as premiering over the other shows so they can get this out of the way and they can start the new seasons of the other shows with those repercussions taken care of. I might even say that episode one will be called Flash Forward, episode two will be called Flash Back, and it'll all be fixed, and they'll be able to start Arrow clean and fresh.
And the third episode will be Flash, what the hell happened?
All right. You know what? We're way off track.
I know.
I was just bringing up something to connect the two episodes together besides the Wizards. Wizard World.
Now we're off to see the Wizard.
We have three more interviews that we want to share with you guys. The first one being, of course, Jason Lennox. We talked to him at the show, brief conversation, and he was there. He promoting John.
He's promoting a comic book, I think.
He's an illustrator and artist.
Yes, and he's working on a new adventure series, Lords of the Cosmos, which appears in his ongoing anthology comic book series, Ugly, Studios Presents. And he took time out to talk to us for a little bit. He gave us his impressions of the convention this year. And he's the one that sent us on a wild goose chase. But listen here, and then you'll understand the goose chase we went on. Hey, everyone. We are here with Jason Lennox. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great.
So what do you think of the convention this year?
Seems to be okay so far.
Have you done a lot of wizard shows before? Or?
I've done this show for 4 years. That's okay. My wizard experience.
Yeah, have you? Do you think it's because it seems a lot bigger than the last couple of years? Does it have a different feel to you this year? Or?
I walked around this morning in the vendors area, and I was kind of surprised with how much stuff was there. Like, there was a psychic. There's a nail parlor.
So I think there's a tattoo artist, I heard.
Yeah, that's there. So then there's a lot of filler in the front that has nothing to really do with what we're doing.
Yeah.
Comic-Con. So, there's like a window company.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's bath fitters. There's there's like a makeup company. Yeah, so there's it may be bigger, but there's a lot of stuff that's like a head-scratcher, at least to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. So tell us a little bit about your anthology.
I've done 3 of them, and I feel they're a lot like the old heavy metals, where there's just different stories, different themes, different art styles. Kind of a grab bag of whatever I wanted to do at the time.
Okay.
And I've done everything from westerns to science fiction to fantasy, so they're fun. I enjoy doing them.
And it's a 4 issues right now, or...?
There's 3, and I'm going to work on taking one of the stories from this one and doing a graphic novel. I have those pages in here. It's called Lords of the Cosmos, and I have 74 pages done.
Oh, wow.
So that's all these. So right now I'm working on those.
Cool. And do you follow the mainstream comics right now? Marvel and DC stuff?
Enough to know that I know that Captain America is a Nazi now.
Okay, so that's the 2 questions we wanted to ask everyone this weekend is, what did you think of the reveal of Captain America being a Hydra agent?
I think that the writers, after 75 years, have just run out of stuff to talk about. Captain America should be able to retire and end his service.
They actually tried that. They tried making him Commander America, Commander Rogers, right?
Yes.
Yeah, make him an old man, and then Falcon was the new Captain America, which he deserves. You know, he's been a loyal partner to Captain America for years. And then they just youth Ray Steve again, so he's young because of the movies. They have to be exactly like the comics or whatever.
Right, right.
And vice versa. And then they just say he's a Hydra agent. But anyone who reads this, you can be mad, but it's just a sales gimmick. He'll be back to normal within a few months.
That's what everybody's basically saying.
Yeah.
Yes. So, what's your other question?
And then the other one is DC Rebirth, where basically it's been revealed that Dr. Manhattan is the person who created the DC Universe.
I heard that, and I also think we're running out of ideas, and that I enjoyed Crisis on Infinite Earths when I was in high school, and I think that's the definitive DC story. And whatever they're trying to do now is pale imitation.
Yeah.
I have a comment on it. Considering the fact that the new Earth Superman is going to be the current Superman again,
yes.
I say let's just take our stupid new, like, you know, event comic and just have a good Superman again. It's better than Superman had to go into hiding for a while when he came to the New 52, but, you know, I do feel bad for New 52 Superman because, you know, he tried and failed so hard.
Yes. But, I mean, I felt that the New 52 Superman was them trying to more humanize Superman and gave him a little more of an edge, which is kind of the Superman we have in the movies now, you know, but now they're going back to the more traditional Superman. I'm wondering how that'll affect the movies in the long run.
Think about, like, Superman, he's not a character that really needs an edge, you know? I think one thing that's good about DC and Marvel is that they have both lighthearted and edgy characters, and Superman is one of the pinnacle examples of a good lighthearted character. He doesn't need an edge because he is Superman. We like him smiling. I like smiling Superman. Have Superman smile. I don't want him frowning anymore. It's creepy. It's weird. Batman frowns, Superman smiles. Those are the rules.
By the way, this is my friend Mick from the Howard Stern Show.
And
Mick is a expert in geek knowledge.
Oh, okay.
Excellent.
Yeah, I don't know everything about geek culture, but I know a freaking lot.
And so the question we usually like to wrap up with is, how do you measure success?
How happy you are at the end of the day. Isn't that what it's all for?
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Good answer.
If you're not happy, you're not really successful.
All right. Cool. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
So, yeah, we never found the vendor who was selling the sex toys. I'm just saying, it was very odd.
Maybe you didn't.
Other people claim they saw it. I never actually saw it. John didn't find it.
And I was all over that place like a cheap suit.
And trust me, there were a lot of cheap suits there.
Yeah, well, yeah, there were. That was aisle three. But the magic underwear was over on the right-hand side of the place near the front. And no, I'm not saying that there were Mormons there.
Did you buy some magic underwear?
No. But it's just all this underwear with, I forget the name of it. It was something catchy, but all this underwear with superheroes on them. That's all it was. It's just one big stall with underwear.
I think you bought some magic underwear.
No, I didn't. I will tell you this, though. Even though the entire stall, the whole point of it was selling magic underwear, they still had pogs.
Well, I'm just going to say,
it's all the
the magic in underoos is they make you feel like a little kid again.
Yes, in a size 34.
Yes.
Or 42. Yes. Okay.
Well, I think because you went off again and did another interview without me, you must have been wearing magic underwear when you did it.
I must have, because the sound quality in this one's much better. Sorry, guys. We're remastering them as fast as we can.
So it was Jewel Staples, but what else can you tell us about her?
She's an author.
And many of you might know her better by her pseudonym of Peter W. Dawes, author of the Vampire Flynn series.
Yes. And she was really awesome. It was fun to interview her. I got to hear a lot about the process, and this interview is for the budding writers out there, really.
This interview is for you because you're a budding writer.
Yeah.
Or you write on butts. I don't know, one or the other.
Oh, God. Okay. So, and now we present to you Peter W. Dawes, a.k.a. Jewel Staples.
Go. Okay, John O'Grady, Vampire Flynn series, and the author is?
My name is Jewel Staples, but I write under the name Peter Dawes.
Okay, and thank you for giving me some time.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate this.
So, how long has the series been out now?
It has been out now for about the last 6 years, but it's been in the state of production for the last 10.
Okay. And have you done anything before that, or is this your first one?
Actually, before I wrote this, I worked in independent comics for a little while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, what'd you do?
I worked for a very, very small studio as their script writer. It was one of those arrangements where I wanted to produce a superhero comic, but they needed somebody to translate their writing into something that their artists could use a little bit. Mm-hmm. So the payment, the kind of quid pro quo that we did, was I would script out their writing, and then they produced my comic.
Excellent. And did you find a difference between doing that and, like, were you just tweaking their stories, or were you adding to the stories with that? Or?
With their writing, I was basically just keeping their stories intact, but I was trying to find a better way to outline it in something a little bit more sequential.
And from that, did you find that you started thinking about better ways to write and figure maybe you'll write your own stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've played around with writing prose ever since I was a teenager. So honestly, it was something that came second nature to me. But as I was writing about the superhero, I started to devise novels about him as well. And it's, you know, it was kind of sad. The independent comic studio that I worked for, it kind of went under. So at the same time, I still had the novels. And it was just honestly only a few months after that I came up with the idea for Flynn.
So a lot of writers, a lot of beginning writers, it's hard to figure out how to get started, how to get into it, and all that. So how did you do this process? Like, here some authors say you have to do it every day, an hour every day at least, or something like that. So do you find that, or how did you make yourself get to the point where you were actually finishing a novel?
Honestly, it was one of those things. I've heard the adage too, like you have to be writing every single day. And what I've discovered over the years, what helped me at first was to try to adhere to that adage as much as I could, because it seems like the more you work with the medium, the better off you are with it. And that's probably a lot better of a way of saying that. Because life as it is, I mean, I have four kids. It's kind of difficult to be sitting in a chair every single day and writing.
Yeah.
But I think what the more important thing is to be dedicated to it and to work extensively with it, because you get a lot more comfortable with it that way.
And did you learn to write, like, so dialogue and description and all that, did you learn that yourself, or does it come to you naturally, or, like, which is the hardest part for you?
The hardest part for me is setting. I take for granted the picture that I'm seeing in my head, and the fact that I need to, oh, that's right, you don't see the room exactly the way that I see it. For me, the things that came a lot more naturally were things like dialogue. It's kind of interesting, working in comics actually helped me out in the dialogue, because you need to make sure that page by page, panel by panel, that you're keeping things interesting, that if there's two characters who are speaking, that they're being engaging. And when I translated that into novels, it actually helped out a lot, because I've had a lot of people say to me that my dialogue is very natural.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. So this book series that you've got now, it evolved from the comics that you were helping to write before?
Yeah, actually, it didn't. It's kind of a separate entity from the superhero comics, but at the same time, think of it kind of as the same universe. It was one of those ideas that I decided to have, like a... I wanted to branch out a little bit, and because of the fact that, you know, like I said, the comic studio went under, I decided, okay, I'm going to bury the superhero comics just for now, the superhero ideas, and I'm going to just go on ahead and try something completely different.
And you're talking about this while you're signing books.
Yeah, I am.
It's all good. And that's not a problem. How's it been, the reaction to your books?
It's been really good. Actually, one of the things I really, really love about the fans of the books is that they're old school like me. I started to write these around about the time that the Twilight series actually came out.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I totally and completely respect people who like it, but that's just kind of not my thing. I wanted to do something a little bit more like vampires, like I got to know them. Like, I read Anne Rice. I used to love watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, stuff like that. And I wanted to devise a series that was a lot more like that. And so, you know, I did, and I've been having a lot of fun with it. The fans seem to really react very well to that.
Okay. And a synopsis of your character, what's he do, is he?
I'll give you basically the short pitch that I give everybody.
Fair enough.
It is about a vampire assassin named Flynn, who discovers why he's so good at killing other vampires, and that's because he was meant to actually be a vampire hunter. And what the series actually goes into is the fact that he now is part of two worlds and not part of them at the same time. The other hunters are humans, and so they don't really trust him all that much because he's a vampire. But then the vampires don't really like him very much because he hunts their own kind. And it kind of goes into the trials and tribulations of having a calling and yet not having a home.
Okay. And when you put this together now, you self-published.
Yeah, we are a very, very small press, but we basically work with the same kind of constraints as self-published authors do.
Okay. I am told that I have to end every one of these with a question, which is, how do you measure success?
I think that you measure it in two different ways. If you're happy with it, if you feel fulfilled with it, it's probably the number one thing. That means that whatever you're doing, you're striking a chord with it that resonates inside of yourself. And other people are going to react very positively to your art if it's something that you like doing. But then the second way is, if you at least have one person who's beating down your door every day and saying, hey, what's the next book in the series? That to me matters, more than anything else. I made the USA Today best-selling list. And,
excellent. Yeah,
and to me, honestly, it still means more to me when this one super fan I have at Pittsburgh emails me than even getting any of the accolades from that.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time, and I really appreciate it, and good luck with selling the books.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Thanks. And I'm out.
Did you soil your magic underwear during that interview?
Oh, God, no. Will you stop with the magic underwear?
No, I will never stop. You called underwear magic underwear. This will now be a thing on the podcast for years to come.
Well, some of the underwear had Doctor Strange and Doctor Fate on it, so I'm sure it was magic in some way.
I'm sure it was.
I can hear the little hands in Ben's mind rubbing together right now.
Yeah, no, he's no. He,
that was a very strange image you just conjured there.
No, he's flashing back to the underpants gnomes from South Park.
I'm just imagining.
As long as you get to step three, it doesn't matter.
I'm just imagining the artwork for this week. So.
Oh, God.
That's what you're trying to steer, isn't it? You're trying to steer us into underwear art.
Yes. You have a problem with underwear art?
Well, maybe we can have it commissioned by our next guest.
Yes.
He'd be glad to do that.
Yes. So.
Talk about rubbing his hands together evilly.
So we did catch up to Rusty Gilligan while we were at the show, and Rusty had a lot to say about current convention scene, things going on, how he feels things could be run a little bit better, and he also talked about some of the movies he's seen and a couple of things that he's been up to. So without further ado, this is a longer one, people. So just relax. You might think it's over, but it's going to keep going. So without further ado, here's Rusty Gilligan.
Oh, it's like all my valuable material.
Oh, no. I know, isn't it? I'm screwed.
No. We're screwed.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Are you ready? You're talking.
I am talking. Yes. That's what we do on this. We talk. That's, because it's not video, so.
It's not video, and I wear my finest dress, too.
Oh.
Damn it.
That's okay. Ben is very adept at putting people in dresses online.
Oh, everyone, now we're talking with Rusty Gilligan, the one and only Rusty Gilligan. How you doing, sir?
All right, how you doing, guys?
We're doing all right. So how are you enjoying Wizard World Philly this year?
This is... sometimes people complain about big shows. This is literally, in my opinion, one of the most professional shows I've ever gone to. It's run well. The volunteers are nice. This year has been... I would say out of the top 10 experiences I've ever had at cons, this would number among them.
Wow.
The crowd has been nice. There was tons and tons of pre-registered tickets and photo opportunities and photo experiences. And I haven't run into one sour puss yet. So it's been awesome.
Well, now you're talking to John, so you've met one.
Damn.
So,
yeah, thanks. So what legend now is our
I heard that he was the Wayne Newton of the comic book set, but that's just my opinion.
I wish my voice were still that good.
Yeah, but you look good in that thong, though. So that's good. Just shouldn't have wore it backwards.
Oh, more ideas for the artwork for this episode.
Ben is never allowed to listen to this, ever.
So stop dripping that Ben and Jerry's on my prints.
Okay.
So what new things do you have out right now?
I have my Mac in Trouble property, which is based on two real life cats, and I have the second issue of Amazing Tales, which is like a prose anthology. It's basically like an old pulp. So if you can picture like The Shadow or The Green Hornet pulps back in the 30s, that's what this is, except more modern. And we have Marvel and Disney and Image-type artists that have been in there with us before. Dan Gorman, Michael Gracia, Laura Inglis, Terry Pavlett. Really good covers. And then we have our Recollection magazine, which is Golden Age. And then I have my prints out and different videos of movies that I've worked on and whatever. Because part of what we make, we donate to animal shelters.
Right.
From every show and everything that we do. And I don't really do a lot of commissions, but I got asked to do commissions. So I usually do this thing where I'll do something overnight and have it the next day.
Right.
Or I'll mail it. And it's very cheap. I mean, compared to others, I'm actually really cheap. Because a lot of my prints are, believe it or not, are only $2 and $3. I've seen some prints here that are like $20 and $30 each, which is great. But for me, going to shows is more a promotional vehicle, and I enjoy that more. A lot of the vendors here and a lot of the artists tend to forget that they used to be fans.
Right,
when I was
right.
a little boy growing up in California, I would bring $20 to a comic book convention and come out with a huge sack of comics. Today, you can buy one item for $20 and that's it. Let alone not even be able to get in. So conventions like this are so well put together that it does cost $80, $100, $200, whatever dollars, the experiences, the photo ops, the autograph sessions, whatever, because you have all the managers and everything in play. But back then, they were just tables full of boxes and bags, and you picked out what you want. I still remember quarter bins and buying.
Oh, wow.
One of my friends still does it at shows back west in California, but he does, you know, he's got all the stuff on the table, and he'll say, you buy the books by the pound. So it's like $5 and you get a pound of comics, and he actually weighs them like they're pulp. But anyway.
So you've been in comics for quite a while now. Mm-hmm. So one of the questions we've been asking different people, of course, there were two big things that came out recently from Marvel and DC.
Mm-hmm.
The first one being the reveal that Captain America has been a Hydra agent his entire life. We're just trying to get, you know, we're trying to get people in the business's opinion of that.
Well, this is radio, so you don't see me shaking my head.
In the range of reactions we've gotten, that's actually kind of low. We've gotten everything from vomit in a bucket to just like sheer rage.
To me, you know what? This is. I'll give you something you probably haven't gotten yet. In all honesty, this is just another ploy. I mean, that's just the way I look at it. I can say, from knowing people like Kirby, working with people like good friends like Rich Buckler and numerous other artists at the time who have worked on Captain America, worked for Marvel, yes, it's like a slap in the face to all of them, because to them, they came from an era where they were adult age during World War II. They really sponsored the country. They were literally loyalists to the flag. They were patriotic through and through. They bled red, white, and blue. Captain America meant something to them because these were all a bunch of grumbly, cigar-smoking, whiskey-toting guys who would work for the pulps. They got a chance to do comics. They would draw the flag punching Hitler or Tojo in the face.
Right,
and it
right.
meant something because they were contributing in their own fashion. But my opinion's a little different than a lot of people. I think it's stupid, but it's another ploy. It's another Rebirth 52 crisis, whatever, and or ultimate type thing. It's going to end. It'll go to a certain point, and it'll end. It'll turn into something else, like everything else does. It never lasts.
Right.
You know, they did this all. They do this all the time. I don't like it when they retcon stuff so much that
DC.
I don't like it when they retcon stuff so much that it becomes anti-continuity, even though continuity is a foreign word these days.
Yeah.
But him being a Hydra agent, you know, it kind of reminds me of like Spider Clone and, you know, the red and blue Superman and, you know, one of my favorite, because I love Golden Age comics, the modern day Justice Society and All-Star Squadron came, you know, stuff. They go, well, that wasn't really Wonder Woman back in the 1940s. It was her mother wearing the costume that would, you know, sleep around with, you know, Wildcat and blah, 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 blah. You know, your mother's a whore. Then she turns around and makes you out of clay. And then says, wear my costume so you can be the second generation or, by the way, you know, you're the strongest female on the planet. Good job.
And of course, speaking of continuity, DC launched their Rebirth, which essentially is Dr. Manhattan created DC Universe.
Dr. Manhattan farted, and that's what happened.
I mean, well, he's quite powerful.
Yeah.
Is it the ultimate?
Very.
Is it the ultimate mulligan, where now they can just reshape the universe whenever they want?
I call Marvel and DC costume shops, because whoever can fit in the costume, they get. They had Peter Parker for a long time, so they cut his head open like a jack-o'-lantern and they put Doc Ock inside there. Then they get rid of both of them and they put some gay minority, whatever the hell, inside the costume. You know, hi, I'm Miles Morales. I can climb walls. I can shoot webs. No, I have my own set of powers, but I still wear the Spider-Man costume. You know, why?
Right.
Because it was on the rack and it fit me. And, you know, I only needed to eat an extra helping of breakfast to fill it out. You know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm good friends with Aunt May and I'm good friends with Mary Jane, even though they don't know who the hell I am. Maybe I cut their grass. You know, what, you know, or, you know, maybe I helped them, you know, maybe I helped them throw out all that extra crap in the back that the dead guy left, you know, whatever. It's nonsense, it is. You know, then there's a Chinese Superman. Then there's, you know, then they take Alan Scott, the my favorite, the original Green Lantern, and make him gay. And then they make somebody, you know, create a character, make it pay its dues, make it climb the ladder, make people love it. And that's right. Good. I don't go for all this stuff. I have no problem with, you know, all the nonsense that they do. You know, Nick Fury, you know, being, you know, the eye patch wearing S.H.I.E.L.D. manager, winds right. up, you know, in the beginning, you know, it was Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos. All of a sudden, you know, it's Samuel L. Jackson. You know, I mean, it's like fantastic. It's like the Wild Wild West movie all over again.
Then again, Samuel L. Jackson could take over about anybody's role.
Yeah, well,
badass.
Yeah, that's about
just
it.
Saying, you know,
everywhere you look, there's Samuel L. Jackson. I think he was in my book bag this morning. I pulled out a pen and he was like, "Here, try this one instead." Like,
and get the snakes off this damn book bag.
It's like he's like the new Morgan Freeman.
Yes.
But the thing is I don't care for all the quick changes that they do. Like the Fantastic Four movie that recently came out was so bad it was aggravating. But we're fans, and you know, I mean, I'm an ultimate fan. As a professional in the industry, you have to be a fan, because if you don't have heart to do what you do, you don't do it right.
Right.
And you don't identify. And that's the big thing. That's why I keep my prints cheap and I play with people at the tables and whatever. But I would love to see a Fantastic Four movie done like the original Fantastic Four. And I think the original two were great. I didn't think they were that bad, really.
I've heard a rumor that...
I heard that same rumor, but he's standing right here.
Oh...
No, this is a rumor about the Fantastic Four movie.
Uh-oh.
The Fantastic Four movie rights may be given back to Marvel.
Oh, another revert, yeah.
In exchange for TV rights to the X-Men.
Right. Because Fox apparently has wanted to do a X-Men TV show for years, but Marvel retains those rights. So that's the deal that they offered them.
Personally, if that actually comes to pass, it would have to, I don't know. See, like, I look at CW and I say to myself, you know, Flash, Arrow, DC Legends, they're on the right track.
Right.
I look at DC movies
right.
and I say, you know, there's just not enough room in the trash can. It's just awful stuff. I
right.
really think that they're bad at making movies.
Yeah.
And I can't stand, like, the latest Batman movies, the ones, you know, the recent trilogy or whatever that
came
out. I can't stand that. It was like The Shadow, in my opinion, because it was grittier and it was more... He was a nervous Batman.
Yes, very nervous Batman.
And the Joker was a terrorist because he wasn't maniacal and funny. And now they do the rebirth thing and Wonder Woman's like, oh no, he's the god Jellos and all this other stupid stuff. So, whatever.
Yeah, we have to wait for announcements, people.
I think this is Morgan Freeman. Hold on.
We wish. Everybody listen then. You'd the whole floor would be quiet.
And now at Wizard Con, the hand of God will be signing over. What is he reading in the book? Anyway.
A lot of people don't remember, but they actually had an X-Men TV series at one point, but it was called Mutant X.
Yeah, I forget why they
a
couple of people
lost the rights or something, and they had changed the name.
I'm probably wrong, and you guys have, you know, listeners that'll probably disagree, but I thought Mutant X started out as a different show, and what happened was is Marvel sued them and helped take it over as part of their, you know, their control legacy. And that was like the terms of it and whatever. And then it died, which is stupid to begin with. And then there was a couple of there was a couple of shows that Marvel wanted to put out because of Mutant X, and it never worked. But what I was getting to before was Marvel has not had very good luck with television. You know, Agent Carter went one season, didn't do very well. Fans brought it back. I think it went two seasons total.
Right.
Now she's going to be, I guess, used in other right. in other shows as like background or flashback character.
And they're pushing for Netflix to continue the third season of Netflix.
Anything's got to be better than Jessica Jones, man. Oh my God!
I didn't think that was too bad, though. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, you would.
Really nice.
honestly, I tell you the truth, man. My ex was that whiny. And was that much on the bottle. I'll tell you, it was a joke. She was whiny, she was constantly drunk, she was getting screwed by left and right, everybody. The purple man was purple for 1 minute. That's worse than the managers at a comic book show, you know, $500 an autograph. You know?
Maybe he got retconned too.
He's the purple man, we can't afford purple makeup. Let's put a tourniquet on his neck. Maybe he'll turn purple for 1 minute. But it was nonsense. And the funny thing is, with Daredevil has been a combination of DC's Batman and the Shadow. And possibly a little Green Hornet thrown in.
Right.
He can fight the Hand. It doesn't have to be a big named guy. It doesn't have to be a Dr. Doom or a Magneto or whatever. So he can fight ordinary villains on the street. He can fight the pickpocketers and blah, blah, blah. And something like that, it was great. The series was fantastic. There was Easter eggs all over.
Right.
And Vincent D'Onofrio was insanely good. Could have had his own series with Kingpin. She was like, I mean, it was, for what they did to Luke Cage, he reminds me more of a has-been football player than a neo superhero. And, then they had the Patsy Walker character. And a lot of people don't know because it's newer because they're watching Netflix.
Right.
And it's retconned also.
Yeah.
But Patsy Walker was Hellcat in the original Defenders.
Yeah, that's right.
And she had this whole legacy with the devil and on and on and on. And it's so odd because they could have done so much with her background characters on the show that they fumbled with her in the foreground. The Daredevil show got better in season two. I think it really launched itself.
Right.
And I saw the promo for Luke Cage, and I thought that was decent. You know, there's a little bit of comedy aspect to it, a little bit of comeuppance. But I hope that they don't do it to where he's always fighting, street trash and ghetto thugs.
He needs somebody, because otherwise it's like Superman just waiting.
You can only measure a superhero by the villain that they fight.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, that's it. You know, take any hero, no matter how eclectic, and measure the villain. Are you fighting Dr. Doom and Magneto, or are you fighting the guy who just picked your pocket, or are you fighting middle guys, like Doc Ock and the Vulture and whatever? It's that kind of thing. I don't think Marvel has cultivated enough of their villains, because if you look at the Avengers movies, they had to throw an whole army of extras at them in the Avengers to merit one big villain. I mean, in the first appearance of the Avengers, it was a sparse Avengers group versus Loki. And at this point, did we lose all that?
No, we're
good.
Are you
sure?
Yeah.
All right, because I have the script and I can repeat it. no, but
wait a minute. Script.
First Avengers had Loki.
Wait, are you saying all his jokes at my expense are scripted?
We had to run it by your manager because we know you have tantrums and cry.
Oh my God!
And I'm telling you right now, I got four boys. I'm way beyond diaper changing. but if you're like in the first appearance of the Avengers, they went after Loki.
Right.
Yeah.
And they had it, but in the movie, the modern Avengers are so overpowered that Loki is like Irving Forbush. So it's like me jumping out my beaten up my mailman, so it's not a big deal. So they had to bring in the giant monsters, and they had to bring in the army of goons, and they had to bring blah, blah, blah. I don't even think Thanos is a strong enough villain, because they put it pretty much, they can make animation faster than they can make the live-action movies. We've already seen Thanos get his butt kicked by the modern Avengers in an animated feature.
Twice, right? He's gotten beaten twice.
What they need to do is bring out, like, the Masters of Evil. They had to bring out Civil War, because the only people powerful enough to beat up the Avengers is other Avengers. You know, you wake up that day and Thor's like, you know, gets up, takes a big yawn, brushes his teeth, puts on a helmet, spins a wheel and says, I'm going to screw up Hulk today. You know, that's the only way he can, you know, I'll go out and do a photo op and then I'll beat the crap out of Black Widow. You know, but I mean, it's like, they don't care. So I just don't see them cultivating their villains much. DC, on the other hand, has cultivated their villains so much that their DC Legends show features two or three of them as heroes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Which was a really bold choice. And then they kill one of them off.
Well,
what the crap?
If you're going to time travel back and forth, they're not really dead.
Oh, yeah, I know.
But I do know that he's supposedly getting his own show. That character is getting his own show on CW for another, not comic-oriented, but getting his own show.
Oh, okay.
So as an actor, he has the choice of being part of an ensemble cast or being, you know, I mean, I would take it. During his off season, he'll come back. You know, they'll meet up with him in time. The same way they did with, the other character, his partner on the show. The name escapes me. But his partner.
Heatwave.
Yeah, partner on the show, Heatwave. They met up with him and he wound up being, working for the Time Lords for, decades, even though it's like 5 minutes.
But
right.
They grew his character.
You know, you're watching one guy beat up the other, then you go to a Folgers commercial, and then decades pass, and then, they're there. So, but whatever. But they're really good work shows, and I heard that Constantine was coming back as CW Irregular on all the shows, which I think is going to be good.
I haven't heard that yet.
And something else that I heard, and I actually heard it at this show from somebody from DC, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I actually heard that some of the characters from The Watchmen may be appearing in DC Legends. They're already doing JSA. So, but we have to figure out, because if you look at Flash, which is the forefather,
right?
You look at Jay Garrick Flash and Zoom and all that, and that's actually Earth 2, but they said it was Earth 3.
Right.
So they meet up with the Sandman at the season finale of DC Legends, and what Earth is he from? Because when they actually went to Earth 2, and there were no heroes, or there was only villains.
Right.
So, I don't know, were they on a break? You know, like, you show up and you'd figure, like, someone would say, you know, Superman's flying in, or, blah, blah, blah.
Well, and there you go, because now CW also owns Supergirl, so is she on Earth 4?
Yeah.
And with Flash saving his mother now, are they suddenly going to bring Supergirl into the universe they created? It's going to, who knows what the hell's going to happen.
If I was DC, I would retcon it so that Supergirl and all of the Superman potential characters were like on a different Earth. Because if it gets too powerful, then you take away from the opportunities that characters that are mid-grade to low-grade, like the Green Arrow and the Flash and Firestorm, it gets taken away. Because I remember years ago, you'd be reading a Justice League comic, and they're all fighting and they're all going crazy, and then on like the last three pages, Superman shows up and one punch, and he flattens the villain, flattens Canton, Ohio, takes out every Starbucks in the country, every monkey now has X-ray vision, blah, 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 you know.
It's funny because that's always been the problem. It's like Ted Kord is a Blue Beetle. He goes up against a really powerful enemy. Why doesn't he just get on his cell phone and go, hey, Clark, I kind of need you here. I knew you could get here in like 5 seconds, take care of this in 2 seconds, and then go back to whatever you're doing 5 seconds later.
Well, they may be arguing because he did walk in on him and Lois one time, so
But on the CW shows, you're right. If you bring Supergirl in, what do you need a guy with a bow and arrow for?
Right. I was always under the belief that having two-fisted heroes is like the conscience of your group. If you notice, all the times that they've ever had two-fisted heroes, those guys are the center of a group. You look at Justice League, everyone's got powers. Batman comes up with a contingency how to beat every hero. They're all laid flat on the floor.
Right.
Green Arrow, not the conscience from the television show, but in the comic and in the fantastic animated cartoons that they had. But he was like fighting for the ecosystem, fighting for the little guy. The first episode of the Justice League cartoons, it was like, you know, he broke up a robbery at a grocery store, and then, you know, he's, you know, against the government, and it's like little conspiracy type stuff, and very eco-friendly. So to me, you got a two-fisted hero, they're really like the backbone or the consciousness of the group. That's the drummer, that's the catcher on the baseball team.
Yep.
And they really do call the shots, because if you think about it, Batman would walk in, grab the guy by the ear, and tell him what parts he's going to shove up what parts. Superman walks in and, you know, I remember in one comic appearance, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman were standing on a rooftop, and they were, he had one of the bad guys. So he goes, give me a second. He grabs him and he brings him across the roof, and he threatens him. And the guy is like, it might have been Deadshot, but he threatens him. And the guy's face goes all stone, and then he just starts spilling his guts. So Wonder Woman says, I wonder what he said. And Superman, with his, you know, his incredible hearing, he says, I heard what he said. You don't want to hear what he said. But it's like the backbone of the group, because how many times have you seen Superman? You know, it's so rare that it happens every day. Yeah. You know, I never get the chance to cut loose. I'm going to cut loose, you know, and then he cuts loose, you know. Like, you know, in the one of the last episodes of the Justice League cartoon, he beats the crap out of Darkseid.
Yeah, I live in a world made of cardboard.
Yeah.
Where you look like you could take it.
Yeah. He took it all. Awesome, he took it all right. Ever. He beat the shit out of him, knocked out the financial district.
Yeah.
You know, there's some guy sitting in an office saying, oh my God, I just solved cancer. This is amazing. Everyone's going to benefit from it. Then boom, the building blows up. Oh, crap! You know?
So
I just proposed to my girlfriend as the building starts crumbling towards her.
DC, why you gotta hate on civilians?
Well, I think we can hate on DC and Marvel all day, so...
You know what the problem is? They're trying to entertain a new audience. I'm a little
Michael
older.
Michael Bay audience.
I'm a little older than you guys, but the way that you have to look at it is every reader generation, which is 8 years, 9 years in marketing terms, every reader generation, they're trying to pick up something. You know, it's the bicycle, then it's the scooter, then it's something else, then it's something
then
it's something else.
Yeah.
You know, we're very, as a culture, as a society, we're very fast when it comes to our entertainment and the way we struggle to be entertained. We're a very hedonistic society. Think about the 60s when it was no cell phones, no home computers, no overnight express, federal express, whatever, no fax machines, whatever. Now, we could. I've actually seen people color pictures on their cell phone and send it to somebody by email, and it's literally, you know, the size of a makeup case.
Right.
You know, it's nonsense. We're very fast. We've come to a slow point right now. We're enhancing what we've struggled 40, 50 years to get ahead of. I mean, we've already had a man on the moon, and we're going to all these other different planets, and we're going to all these great, beautiful pictures through NASA.
Yep.
We're struggling now to enhance the entertainment that we want so hard.
Right.
We're not developing as much new. So our 8-9 year marketing. We're Morgan Freeman. Poor Morgan Freeman. He has to pick up work at the show. No, but we're struggling right now to enhance a lot of our entertainment. And the great thing about it is they're just going to keep perfecting it. So we'll get better cell phones, we'll get better TV, we'll get better internet, we'll get other things and apps and whatever. Yeah. But comics are way behind, and comics preceded all of this. And if you look at things like professional wrestling, and if you look at things like the way sports characters, they'll now have mohawks, and they'll have, like the XFL, they had their names, code names on the jerseys.
Right, right.
And they're hidden characters in video games and whatever. Comic books really pushed all of that. Comic books were the original infusion that made a lot of other forms of entertainment bigger.
Right.
And if it wasn't for comic books, there would be very, very, very little co-op merchandising. You wouldn't see very much toys and cereals. You wouldn't see, you know, little coupons for free things and whatever. I'm a victim of it too. I give out these trading cards at shows where you can download free comics. Co-op's marketing is huge, and that's all because of comic books. But they don't know how to handle themselves now. They can't upgrade a comic, and digital is not the future of comics.
No.
It's a sidestep. It's another way to present it. It's like going from newspaper to direct marketing paper. Marvel used to have Mando paper for their Marvel Fanfare comic, which was the breaker, and on and on and on. But now they can't really upgrade the industry more, so they're going to television and film.
Right.
Which they've skirted for a long time, but they've perfected. And now they're dropping the ball on that. So
DC is anyway.
Well, I look at DC's Gotham show as a cop show. It's not a Batman superhero show.
Right, right.
I look at Marvel's S.H.I.E.L.D. as a spy show, like I Spy or in that ilk. So to me, it's not a superhero show.
Yeah.
If they happen to give us a superhero or a villain, nice. My friend is an artist, and he says S.H.I.E.L.D. is like a commercial for a lot of movies or a lot of the other television shows or products or whatever going on. I look at it as we're lucky to have it. Because in all honesty, they could have picked anything other than S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, and S.H.I.E.L.D.'s not even a governing body for the superheroes. They're just kind of like a higher police force.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but the thing is that they're starting to drop the ball on a lot of that stuff. And they need to figure out what their next level is. I think DC hit it with the DC Legends thing.
Yeah.
Because we've seen characters, I mean, you would never see Jonah Hex or Ra's al Ghul or Vandal Savage, who's a Earth 2 JSA character.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see these characters in regular Arrow or Flash. You wouldn't see characters like B-slated characters like Zoom and Hunter Zolomon or you know, or Vibe. You know, you wouldn't see crap like that. You know, whatever. I think the second they created Vibe, DC like was like head in hand going, oh, crap. You know, if we didn't commit it to paper.
That's the reason why they've killed him so many times.
Though. Right, right. It's just, you know, it's just one of those things. I personally think that they're gonna need to upgrade. DC's going to need to upgrade their films to be their television.
Yeah.
Marvel's so good with movies, but they're terrible with animation. All of their animation is awful. The only thing that I ever really liked was the Avengers Assemble cartoon. Other than that, everything else was kind of...
Yeah, you thank Bruce Timm for the DC stuff.
And that Neil Patrick Harris Spider-Man series, that was fantastic.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I think it was the MTV one.
Yeah.
I thought that was fantastic.
Animation.
It was a little over the top digital, but I enjoyed it. So, mostly because the voices and the plot lines. So, who did you guys come to see? Now we turn the tables or interview you. Who did you guys come to see at the Wizard
Haley
Show?
Hilly Atwell.
Hilly Atwell. Did they throw you out?
They tried.
They tried.
I'm quick.
I could make a lot of jokes, but I won't.
I came here to see Rusty Gilligan.
You did not. I know. I parked the car. Oh, I can't wait to see Rusty. Get to the front door. You know Rusty? No, who's that? Okay, turn around to the other guy. Hey, I came to see Rusty. Are you here to see Rusty? Who's that?
So, good question to wrap up on, that we always like to wrap up with, is how do you measure success?
What's that?
How do you measure success?
What's that?
Okay, what is it? That took a second.
I look at in this industry, if it's fan appreciation and if it's fan interaction, audience participation, that's successful to me. If I go to a show and I make $1 a day, but I handed out a stack of cards, handed out a stack of flyers, or made a couple of people look online at the comic that I do or whatever, that's successful for me. Because it's a word of mouth industry, the internet, you know, you used to say a picture's worth 1,000 words. Mm-hmm. Well, literally, posting something online is worth 1 million shares.
Right.
So to me, anything that has to do with bringing the fans back in and entertaining the fans, something that I'm very fond of saying is you can go and say, oh, I'm filling in my Fantastic Four collection, so I need number 120. Well, you get 120 at a show at a good price, and you're like, this is awesome. What's the first thing you tell somebody? I have all the Fantastic Fours. You don't tell them how long it took you to find 120. You don't say,
right,
I'm so lucky, I remember the vendor's nose hair color, blah, 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 whatever. But you say, I filled in my Fantastic Four. Okay. Somebody comes to the table, my table, let's say, and I know others that are here, and they're very drippy and dry. They sit and draw all day long, nose in their phone, Angry yep. Birds, or reading a book, or blah, blah, blah. So I always tell people, you go to Disneyland, and Mickey Mouse steals Uncle Phil's, you know, headpiece and runs away with it, yep. Or you go to a show and you take a picture with the, you know, 300-pound Wonder Woman or whatever, that's something that you'll remember forever.
Right.
You'll take that picture, it'll be online, it'll be a meme, it'll be in your photo album for years to come. Everybody's dead and they're still talking about that time when Dr. Doom slipped on a paper at a convention and knocked over a whole group of people. It's a memory.
Right.
So when people come to my table, I joke with them, I do card tricks, I have dice rolling game, I fool around with people all the time because I want them to have the memory when they go. And I love, which happens to me a lot, I love it when people send emails to the promoter and turn around and say, oh, that guy Rusty was really nice, or write me in to go to a convention, can you have him come to the show, or blah, 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 or I won this, and they take a picture of it and show right. it online.
Mm-hmm.
Memories are, I mean, it's very easy for these guys behind the table to offer entertainment. They have to realize that they're far and above the entertainment prospect that their prints and their comics and their videos and what have you are meant to offer. They should be, we're all actors for what we do. You know, we're all entertainers.
Right.
You'll go to a table and you'll ask for a sketch and you'll talk to the guy and he might tell you a joke and you'll remember it and you
right.
might pass it on. Some guy might turn around and say, you know, how much is that? Oh, it's $5. Then, you know, go back to like, you know, Plants vs. Zombies on his phone. You know, whatever. And you're not very much inclined to buy unless you need it or want it without
right.
him being there. So it might as well just be a hall of vending machines, really.
Yeah, that's true.
So the success in this industry is the fans. They're the ones that need to be entertained. I wouldn't want to go to a show that cost me $250 to get in, $300 to go to my favorite guy and get you know, my autograph and photo op, have the ability of walking around all these tables with all these beautiful artists and fine artwork everywhere, because literally even the worst artist here needs to be here because
right.
it's artist subjective and everybody likes anything.
Yeah.
Stick figures. But just to turn around and bore them to death.
Yeah.
You know, I've actually been at shows where sometimes people don't walk down an aisle because everybody's just sitting there, you know, on their phone,
right.
you know, that's about it. So that's really it. There's so many good fans at this show. This show has turned out literally to be one of the three best shows ever. I do a bunch of appearances every year, but I like three of them more than anything. And this show has literally been one of the top three shows that I ever do. And I've done tons of shows. I started in the 70s, so I've done tons of shows. This is literally one of the top three.
Wow. All right, well, thank you for your time.
All right, man, as we're shaking hands, because you can't see on the radio.
Yes.
So there
we'll
we
let
go.
You get back to your Angry Birds game.
Yes, yes. Okay. I have the yellow bird to go.
All right.
Are you still with us?
Wait, what? Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Who? Where?
Oh, you meant what? The audience.
Yes, yes, yeah. I'm trying to wake everyone up. No, no, no. Rusty's always fun to talk to. You probably enjoyed that more than when the three of us just talked. So.
You know, I wonder if Rusty is a fan of Captain Marvel.
I don't know. Are you going to talk about the current rumors of Captain Marvel?
I like the current rumors about Captain Marvel.
I know, but it hasn't been confirmed yet.
But what has been confirmed is they're talking to her, which can only mean good things. John doesn't have any idea what we're talking about.
No, he
right
doesn't.
Now.
And I can't remember the actress's name.
Chloe Grace Moretz?
No, they're talking to Brie Larson.
Oh, she'd make a good one.
Yeah, yeah, I think she'd fit the role well.
I'm not denying she would, but it's, you know, you gotta, because you hear rumors like that, and then 3 weeks later, it's somebody else, you know?
Yes, Chloe Grace Moretz.
Which is why we have to talk about it now while it's still fresh.
Exciting and new.
Completely deny it when the next rumor comes
out. Oh,
along.
Good, yes, yes. Oh, yeah, no, we never said that. We always
We have a much better track record than anybody else.
We always said it would be John O'Grady. But hey.
All right, so now I have to find a picture of Brie Larson to put John's face on.
Oh, God, no.
While wearing magic underwear.
You will not defile that woman with my face, please. Look, worst comes to worst, just get, what was the name of that movie? Weird Science. Wasn't it?
That old one with the where they make the woman with the computer?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, that wasn't underwear on their heads. That was bras.
Yes.
Close enough.
Form of underwear.
That'll work.
And it did perform magic.
Yes. We can get one of those pictures and put your face on it. It's easy. And then have Brie Larson be the woman that you made in the background dressed as Miss Marvel.
Right. It wouldn't be her first superhero movie anyway. She was in Scott Pilgrim. As well.
Yes. But Scott Pilgrim, she'll be good. She'd be good in this. I think she can do a serious, semi-serious role. It is Marvel still.
Well, here's something interesting. I heard this rumor on Hollywood Babylon this morning.
Dude, don't give away our sources.
And the thing that they said on the show, now, of course, my first issue is they kind of talked like it was a done deal. But everything I've read since then said it's still just rumor. They're still just talking.
Trial ballooning.
But they said that she's the first Academy Award winner that would playing a Marvel superhero. Is that true? Like, I haven't looked into everything.
So, they're saying she. I'm sure there've been nominees, but
no winners. Okay, I wasn't sure if Benedict had won one or if.
Well, he hasn't really been in a lot of theatrical productions. Like he comes from television acting.
Oh, that's true. That's true. How about Mr. Junior? I think he's been nominated once, but I don't know if he's ever won.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Mark Ruffalo has been nominated for things, but again, I don't know if he's won one.
So is that something that DC has over?
You mean with Affleck?
Yes, with Affleck playing Batman.
Well, they finally found a good actor who's perfect for the role.
I mean, yeah, technically they have that over them, but it's look what they're doing with it.
They finally got a casting right, and then they gave it to Snyder, who Snyderized it.
Okay, so real quick, Robert Downey Jr. was nominated twice for Chaplin for Best Actor in 1993 and Tropic Thunder Best Supporting Actor in 2009. I knew he had been nominated, so he never actually.
Yeah, nominated for Tropic Thunder. I mean,
That's cinematic gold.
It is.
It was so politically incorrect, though. Like, knowingly, tongue-in-cheek, but yes. it was so wrong.
It's, I know. He was a white dude playing a black dude playing. Oh my God, yeah. That movie's so funny. Anyway, wow, we're babbling now, guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what happens after you spend a couple of days, a couple of minutes, hours with Rusty. However long it feels.
Yes.
So, this is, you know, been with our little conversation at the beginning and that nice 39-minute conversation we have with Rusty. This has been a long one, guys, so I think maybe we should put a pin in it.
I think it feels just right.
Just right?
Okay. Just right.
All right. Well, boys and girls.
As long as we stick the landing.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for a superhero land.
Okay.
On that,
I wanted to...
Oh, my God. You won't stop talking. On that note, boys and girls, as always.
So about this other thing.
Kick your friends
Are you
out.
Ready now, Dave?
Always kick your friends out first, and then don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.